With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. You can question my intentions, but don't question my words.
Hollywood is full of pretenders, and I slay them all.
Oh, you guys! You guys, there's so much to say. I feel like we just recorded, honestly, off recording. We just had a mini episode of our own, a Patreon for the Soul, which yes. I'm very into. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 240, and I am so excited to be joined by a guest co-host who I have been looking forward to talking to for a minute, because I feel like I talk to you in my head when I'm watching the show, so all the better that I force you to listen to the things I have been thinking about for a couple months. Guys, welcome to Andy's Girls and the People's Couch. None other than Real Housewife of Beverly Hills, Crystal Kung Minkoff.
Crystal. I'm so comfortable.
Well, first off, we're recording in your gorgeous hotel space somewhere. Whereabouts is no one's business here in New York City. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm so excited to be here with you, because I just adore you. I'm a stan. I've learned that word now. I stan you. Is that what I did? I say it correctly?
I'm looking at Crystal's friend Sabrina. Chris, Sabrina, did you get that? I mean, we did technically record it for my podcast. Do we have a video? I might have to have you redo that, as the kids say in the Hollywood terms.
Anything you want, anything.
For something you so much. I have to say, I feel like I commented on something on your social and you responded and were like, I'm a fan. And I had a heart attack and I was like, I feel like I'm misinterpreting what fan is. So I didn't want to respond because I'm like, surely she means this for somebody.
No, I mean it for you. Totally. But I get it, because like, when people are like, they're fanning me now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm literally like just like a person that happened to be asked to do a show. Like, I'm like the same person I was like the day before the show started. So I feel like that it's odd to me. But like when I see you, I'm like, I'm such a fan, and I have to remember, like, she's just like a regular person, but I get really excited that I get to be near you.
Guys, I can't believe this is happening. First and foremost, I just have to say that I have so many questions for you, but you're bringing up a really interesting point, which is the idea that you yourself have stayed the same, noting you may have learned things about yourself from this experience, but you are still waking up with you every morning. It just so happens that people that see you walking down the street may want to say hi, may know more about you than you ever thought a stranger could. What is that like? Is there a way to describe it?
So Sabrina and I were having lunch and someone came up to me like, oh, you know, love you on the streets. It happened last night. It's a little odd.
Yeah.
But I think because I would see it happen with people in LA, like if I was out with an actor or someone famous, or like even with Rob is like, has never been a public person. Like his work is public. He's not public. Mm-hmm. But like the random time, like serious animation fans would know who he is. Like that's, you know, those are the deep fans. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's kind of nice. So it's not like totally foreign. It hasn't been that unfamiliar, but it's still weird. I think I remember Teddy said to me, people, like, you'll feel like people are staring at you, that you don't know if they're staring at you because they know you from the show or you have something in your teeth. Like they or you think that they're staring at you. So you're always, I'd rather people actually come up to me, because then it's like I know why you're looking at me. Not because like something looks weird on my face or something, you know, I have a mark on my face or I don't know, whatever it is. But no, it's a little odd, but it's so nice. Everyone's so super friendly. Like it's always been very kind. So, but even if they weren't, I'm like, okay, it doesn't really matter.
I mean, I would hope that someone that's interacting with you IRL is like, you're great. And not like, I have a list of grievances person IRL who I'm within 6 inches of.
I would be open to that too. I'd be like, if you had a problem, I'd be like, okay. But no one hasn't done that yet. But everyone's been super respectful. No, it's a totally new and bizarre thing. Yeah. And I thought, it's weird.
How do you prepare for signing on to reality TV? Like what inspired the decision to go on this specific kind of show? Did anything, or was it just honestly, this is an amazing opportunity, it's something fun to do, I've never done this before, and let's just kind of ride the wave?
I think that it was sort of, it happened in the right time for me.
Yeah.
I think had it happened maybe pre-COVID, my first call was 2 weeks after lockdown.
No.
So I was just kind of sitting there depressed because the world was imploding. And I think if I was in my normal life, I'd be like, this is not for me, because things were moving. And I got the first call and I was like, no, like not right away. Teddy called me. And she's like, why? I was like, it's just not for me. And then I told Rob and he was like, you're doing not just take a phone call, because it'll be the one thing you can look forward to this month, because we're locked down. Just something interesting.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Even though he was not on board, he was just like, Rob is the kind of person who's, don't close anything until you know what it is about.
Yeah.
So I took a call and I was like, okay. And then like not really interested. And then they called again. And then I just sort of went through the motions of it, still not, I just never thought it would happen, you know, because so many people get called and I never thought about it. Just was just like, oh, for fun. And I would hang up and I would just go do something inside my house, you know? And then it just kept continuing. And then I got a call from Kathy. And Kathy's like, what do you think? And she called me at like midnight. And I'm like, you know, it was COVID.
So like, I was going to bed at 1 p.m. Kathy Eastern time.
But I'm going to like bed at 7 p.m. at this point because nothing to do.
Right.
And I'm like, why is Kathy calling me? I'm like, is she going? Like, I didn't, you know, no one's going out or anything. And she's like, I just think we should do it together, you know, and I know who you are and you know me and we can go in this together. And why not? I was like, I look at Rob. I'm like, Kathy says we should do the show. And he's like, how can you say no to Kat? Like, what? I don't know. I'm like, this is so crazy to me. And I was like, you know what? While the world, so many people's opportunities are being taken away in such a horrific time.
Yeah.
I was going through my whole existential, like,
love it.
The world is giving me an opportunity. And what does this mean?
Yeah.
You know, and I have not really done anything for myself in that way. I was like, maybe. And I felt really solid. Like, Rob and I always felt solid. Like, that was our biggest fear. We called his agents. We called all our family of friends. We had a ton of meetings about it because mm-hmm. we wanted to go in as eyes wide open as we could. Mm-hmm. And we felt good as a family. And that was really never an issue. And we said, okay, I'll do it. Because it's not an individual decision. It's a family decision. Mm-hmm. If no one in my family wanted me to do it, I wouldn't have done it.
And it's also a business decision.
Totally. And we asked Rob's agents. We're like, is this not good? He's like, no, like, it has nothing to do with Rob. You know, this is about you. And I was like, you know, and also being the first Asian American on the show, you know, I felt a massive responsibility, a fear of the responsibility, to mm-hmm. be totally honest. You know, like, would I be representing properly? What does that mean? And I remember Rob just saying, like, you can't represent every single Asian person. Mm-hmm. You know, you are your own person, but you're so proud of your culture, so proud of your family. So that's always a great thing to show in, you know, your life. So it just, there were so many layers to it. It was not an easy decision. And so once I said yes, I was like,
It's such an interesting time, too, to be the first Asian woman on full-time on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills during COVID,
yeah.
when there is rampant racism and yeah. xenophobia happening, noting the stress compounded on you, not only as feeling like you are the representative of this, the stress, the pressure of that, but also doing so in a bubble when you know outside of the bubble, there's all of this other shit that's being said. Like, I would think the world could sometimes feel like a little bit of a trigger in that sense. When you're seeing the headlines, you're seeing what people are saying in real time, having literally nothing to do with you
yeah.
as a person. But when you think about the symbol of it and how that can be weaponized for people, almost like against your own will at times.
Yeah.
That's a lot. It's like there's a heaviness to that just because of this unfortunate time for the world, you
totally.
Know?
It was actually even at some point scary.
Yeah, of course.
My mom, you know, I remember it was the shooting in Atlanta.
Oh my God.
And my mom called me crying and she says, don't do this. I was like, we were already deep in it. The mm-hmm. show. And she said, I don't want you to go outside. People know who you are now. She really just thought I had a target on my back. And I was like, I'm fine. I don't want to scare. Because she was already just scared of being a Chinese person. Mm-hmm. And so her and Marshall, her boyfriend, would just not leave the house at all. Just lock the door. They were so afraid. And, you know, of course I have mixed feelings. I like to think of myself as someone who's like, oh, I'm going to just stand up and be out there. You know, mm-hmm. I was scared.
Of course.
And so I just kept teetering between like putting myself out there more mm-hmm. and then also hiding. Mm-hmm. And I think that is very common for mm-hmm. people of color, especially, mm-hmm. you know, during this time. So, yeah, like, again, it's like this is just one aspect of the many layers and complications and fears about doing the show mm-hmm. and becoming public in a time that's so tumultuous. At the same time, I know who I am and mm-hmm. I know my family and the support I have. So I was like, I think I can do this. I think I can represent properly and speak out for those who are too afraid to. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm still scared inside.
And there is the idea of representation that also says, I am a human person, flaws yeah. and all. Like there's an expectation and a weight on so many people who are representatives of members of marginalized communities, including people of color, most especially including women of color, where it feels like the idea that you may or may not be perfect in every way, you're constantly being evaluated against a scale that is obscenely unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So the idea to me of going on a show like Housewives, which was formed in many ways as the, like, you know, behind the gates kind of idea of these women who seem to be living perfect lives, and yet now we know they are also, God forbid, human people, to be a representation of who you are on a show like Housewives, putting aside exactly what I just said 2 seconds ago, mm-hmm. like all this stress and being the first and the pressure that comes with that, and just saying, like, this is who I am,
yeah,
is incredibly powerful. And it's something that you should be, I think, honestly commended for. I find myself a little bit of a Crystal apologist in many ways, in all the best ways. Because I feel like there are things that you have experienced and communicated on the show that have genuinely connected with me, where I'm like, oh my God, somebody's talking about body dysmorphia, like, check the list on my soul. Like, somebody's talking about recovery from disordered eating, check the list off my soul. Somebody is communicating and refusing to give in to the pressure of creating and maintaining boundaries, which is incredibly difficult, let alone when you're doing so with a group of women, you know, surrounded by cameras, where you know that you are going to be examined and criticized regardless of what choice you make, but you're still making those choices. Like, you're refusing to bend in, I think, all of the best ways. Check. I think that's incredibly powerful to see. You know, I've seen every episode of the season, which has been extraordinary, I gotta tell you, like, one of the best of all time, no big deal. But I've seen every episode a couple times. This morning I got up early and I did, like, a little bit of a breeze through all 11 episodes, or how many we've had so far, and I was really kind of, just to watch some of your responses in key moments in episodes, you have stayed pretty consistent. Watching the episodes back, first off, are you watching the episodes? Are you watching them in real time? How has that changed your perception of your responses in some of these heightened moments?
Wow. You're an incredible interviewer. Like, these are very dynamic questions.
I was like, where'd you get your mask?
I love these conversations. I mean, this is, like, I love this topic and I love talking about this stuff. Mm-hmm. So to begin with, looking back on it, I'm reactive, even though I'm quite stoic on the show, because I'm hyper aware of the cameras. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for me. You know, when I went to Tahoe, it was my second day of shooting.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was my third. So Wednesday I saw Lisa and Kyle. Friday was Dorit's dinner, and then we left Monday. So it was my third day of shooting. Oh my
God, that makes me want to die a little bit.
So day 3, 4, 5 was.
That makes me want to. Things are curdling in my spirit. Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's not only my third day of shooting, third day of meeting everyone, second day because I only had the dinner, and just I was keenly aware of camera. I've never been on camera before.
Yeah.
You know, and so. When people, it's funny, the audience, and some people are like, oh, there was a hot mic, she didn't know. Like, you don't forget. You don't forget 10 camera. Like, everything happens. Like, you know what's happening. So my initial reactions are always, like, as my husband would happily confirm, I get very reactive. Like, no, you know, that didn't happen. And, you know, and I do self-reflect a lot. Mm-hmm. And I do that actually with Rob. Like, Rob and I will sit back. Rob is, like, the king of, like, therapy and processing. And but I am someone that takes a long time to process. Mm-hmm. I will process things fully. The issue with filming is that you work better, I think, or I don't know what better word for it, if you process quickly. Like, mm-hmm. they want everything's lightning speed. Where I'm like, if I met you and we had conflict, like, I would need a week or two to sort of process it, and then I'll come back and, like, let's talk about it. But you have, like, 3 hours to do it. like you have to come back and do it. And you're like, well, I need more time. So that's something that I have to learn that I learned through the process of filming. So when I look back, yeah, I mean, I've always been, despite growing up with all my body dysmorphia, my eating disorder, which would seem like someone who's hyper insecure. I think I really worked hard at trying to transform that pain into finding confidence in other ways, right? But my biggest reason that I didn't want to do the show was being ridiculed about my looks.
Oh my God.
Which makes me like literally makes me cry.
I actually am about to cry. Okay. Yep. Well, let's cry a little bit. Let's cry a little bit.
It's like a minute to minute pain for me. Just sitting here in my physical body, I'm always uncomfortable. And I was just I'm always constantly scared of it. And I will say, I haven't gotten really any negative about it. And Rob's like, see? And I'm like, it doesn't really matter. Actually, the audience, what I realized, I don't need that. I don't need that validation. It's just, so actually, I think I'm going to be just talking in tangents, but I think the most amazing part of being in the show, however challenging it is and has been, has allowed me to really work on myself and realize that, like, that is something that I'm in constant process and working on, and it's for me. It's not like walking in and fearing what other people thought is something that I've just always lived my life like, and I don't want to live like that anymore. You know, I want to be okay with myself, and yeah. So I find that really fascinating to watch back, and when I watch myself sitting there, and like there's a lot of like minor tics that I watch myself obviously with different eyes and other people,
of course,
and it's like I just remember being like, oh God, how do I look? That's all I kept thinking. So I think when my face is like sort of, people are like, oh, resting face or whatever, it's because I'm so uncomfortable physically, you know. I'm always kind of like awkwardly smiling because I'm nervous about being judged all the time about how I look.
Can I just say, just to push back on one aspect of that, she says to the woman who just bared her soul, I don't think it comes for me from my experience, having had disordered eating since I was a child, relating to trauma, where I was like, it's a whole fucking thing. But I don't know that it comes from a place of insecurity. I wouldn't say, as an outsider now judging the journey that you just said in the most vulnerable way possible, the word insecurity, I want you to be kinder to yourself than insecurity. Because for so many of us who deal with disordered eating and body dysmorphia, and again, you should feel however the fuck you want to feel and tell me to go fuck myself.
Call it a day.
It doesn't necessarily need it. The idea of insecurity is almost further criticizing yourself for the journey that you're going on. And sure. For me, at least, the experience of disordered eating and the concern about it being weaponized has come from a place of control and come from a place of needing to feel better.
For sure.
Where it's like I am in such a place of fear, anxiety, stress, that the only thing that I feel like I can control, or the only thing that I can do to love myself, is to, you know, partake in a system and a structure that's not good for me. But the one good thing about it is that I'm doing it from a place of love, if that makes any sense.
It does.
Something that my psychiatrist and I've been working on for a hot minute. Shout out Dr. K. I saw you earlier today. I owe you some money. What's up, Dr. K? But it's something that I've worked on with her. And she started to say it to me a couple years ago. And several months later, I started to understand, which was like, did you feel good in that moment? And I'm crying to her. I'm like, how dare you? There's nothing good about this. This is so painful. I'm so upset. Don't minimize the experience of what I'm going through by saying I somehow feel good. And she was like, yeah, let's work on that cognitive behavioral therapy that we're doing every week for an hour. And think about it as you were trying to help yourself the best way you could. Yeah. Like, it just so happened that it's this thing that is maybe not ideal. And it's this thing that sometimes feels like a burden. It feels like the rock that I am carrying through my life. And I just wish there was a day where I could let it go. But there is no day. Like, that's, and everybody has their own experience. And one person can say that it comes from a place of anxiety, and another person can say that it comes from a place of self-loathing, and another person can say that it has everything to do with a relationship with person X or Y.
And by the
or
way,
Z.
They're all true.
And they're all true.
Yeah, everyone's history is different.
Everyone's history is different. Yeah. And everyone's use of language in defining that history is different. But I just offer a tiny little bit of a zhuzh, which is to say that to live with any kind of disorder or what sometimes feels like a conflict or a burden or a weight or an obstacle, if we shift and we try to think about it as this is and feels like a burden, this feels like an obstacle, this feels like a problem that I constantly need to solve, and yet the answer is like won't let me go and it lives from within. But if I look at it as at its most granular, strangest, foundational weight, is this something is this disorder, illness, whatever you want to call it, did it come from a place somewhere, even if it's been distorted, from a place of like love,
yes,
of trying to provide something to myself for me, just personally, just yeah, my little personal, you know, couple shackles. It has helped me a little bit, because there is the idea of like the joke with my therapist, different than psychiatrist. Don't know if you got that.
I do.
But the joke with my therapist was at the end of every therapy session before COVID, and it wasn't a joke, I would look in her mirror and I would be like, can you please tell me if I look fat today? Like, I would look at her, look at the mirror, and I'm like, I just really, regardless of the weight, and she's seen me at every size, I was like, I just need you to like tell me if my face looks different, because I feel like I feel like I look shocking right now. I feel yeah, like I, and she would be like, well, Sarah, you know, and that's your own experience. And like, if you feel in a certain way, she's like, Sarah, I see nothing different. And it would end every single therapy session.
I completely understand that.
4 months. And yeah, it's something that people may not under, to me, dead serious, because I've seen this happen in the Bravo world. It is the dirty little secret that gets absolutely no weight. People refuse to understand or empathize with people who have experienced or live with disordered eating.
Really?
Not great. In a way that they don't do when we're talking about forms of addiction based on alcohol consumption. Mm. Or drug use, or many other instances. For some reason, there is a little bit of a wall when it comes to the idea of body shaming, fat shaming, and an inability or disinterest in processing the harmful ways that people have weaponized bodies against primarily women. And to see someone on screen, on Beverly Hills specifically, a show that's all about an extra element of veneer, and to see someone who is talking about feeling uncomfortable in herself and feeling violated when her boundary or space has been crossed, to me, as soon as I saw that, I was like, I know exactly what she's talking about. It's, I watched that scene, and I've watched the episode since, and to now understand.
Made me cry again.
Don't cry or cry. Fuck it. I'm the Oprah of podcasting. Where's my Hawaii estate? Where is my
it's
Stedman?
Coming. It's coming.
I can buy my own diamond. We can be engaged for 35 years. I'm fine with that too. Billionaire with the P for poverty. But the idea of you know, even having these kinds of conversations and fitting within the construct of housewives is incredibly powerful. And it's a conversation that I've had on Andy Scrolls. And, you know, there is a level of people just don't know. If you haven't experienced it, you may just not know.
Yeah, if you don't know. And I don't begrudge anyone who can't connect with that, because there's so many things that I can seemingly feel look cold, or like I'll say that, like if I haven't experienced it, if I don't know anyone with it, I want to know, I want to learn. But if you don't, if you've never had anything, it's hard to connect, you know. But I did get a lot of messages after from people who have eating disorders who very much understood my experience. And maybe you're right, like you said, like people, there's a wall. So the people that don't want to understand how I felt, maybe it's uncomfortable for them to talk about it, you know, or really understand what an eating disorder is and body dysmorphia. It's you know, it's like all my friends who have, I think most people have, especially women, you know, they're like, oh, I wish I enjoyed looking like that 10 years, you know, when I was 25 and I was that, you know, and it's so weird to watch it so recently, you know, and like, oh my God, like I can look at myself now on TV, like, oh, I look good there. But I felt terrible.
I so get
it. And I still feel terrible now, even though I know that, like, I can't connect them. I cannot connect it. I feel physically uncomfortable all the time. And it's not like so hard on me, because I think it's been so long, as you said, from childhood.
Yeah.
That it's not debilitating. It's like I've come to a comfort of being uncomfortable. Which is probably a messed up thing.
No, I don't know. I'm nodding. I'm like, it definitely helped me during COVID. I was like, oh, well, here's my special buddy. Yeah.
So it's so complicated and nuanced. And only if you can experience. And I even got some DMs from people, not too many, but like, that's not, you don't have a real eating disorder. I do.
Oh my God.
But I write back and I respond to those people, you know, even like, because I said, this is my experience. Whatever I'm talking about is my experience. Like, I very much have one. I've been to a lot of therapy about it. But I think for me, it's like the lesson learned, back to the original question of watching back, is like, I would love to, if I can learn to just one inch closer to being more comfortable by watching the show and just keep processing that experience of remembering how I feel, watching it now, remember, if I just keep going through that, maybe, luckily, I can get one step further to feeling okay, which will help me with my eating disorder, because I don't want it anymore. And I know it will be with me forever. I know that it's a long-term thing. But just one step closer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's something that Dr. K and I work on a lot, which is like, she hates when I talk about having a quote unquote eating disorder. Cause she's like, you know, it is what it is. But that is not in the personality identification process. Eating disorder is not one of the letters chosen. And it's so often the ways that I think about myself start with that, because it starts with your physical being. It starts with like, are you comfortable in your body, or how do you treat your body as a reaction to outside circumstances, or the ways that you cross boundaries with yourself, with your physical being, that are actually a form of coping.
Right.
And it's understanding that it's like a weird thing when you think about the phrase disordered eating, because yes, it is technically and accurately disordered eating, but it's a perspective that was based for many people in the idea of needing a sense of control. And
it's totally control based.
Yeah, it's control based. And it's like, what's the best way to think about this in terms of, without feeling like I'm minimizing myself or anyone else, like the idea of understanding that you know, I'm always going to have a reaction to circumstance. And sometimes the reaction is healthy and sometimes it's not. And for a long time, and I still do this, I put up real serious boundaries with people where I'm like, don't tell me you're going to X or Y. Don't talk to me about how you feel about your body because I'm afraid it's going to trigger me. And what I've been trying to work through in my own life, or if somebody says something negative about, or if I think they're going to say something mm-hmm. negative, whatever that is, or God forbid, swiping right, like so many different areas. But in the idea of, you know, thinking about the maintenance of boundaries, what is to me probably healthier in the long run, or at least, you know, selfishly more interesting, is to think about the, okay, instead of laying out these boundaries and spinning out when they get crossed, like, be okay with something, with someone pushing up against them. Mm. Like, it's not so black and white, which is, I think, why I, with Andy's Girls, I like love to live, I lap up living in the world of gray, because life is not actually, it does not allow for that kind of regimented thinking, because a line will always be crossed. Someone doesn't know when they're interacting with me what my boundaries are. Right. And if the first thing they know is me expressing the boundaries to them, I'm already creating a boundary and like getting to know this person.
Right.
So for your choice to go on a reality show like Beverly Hills, like The Housewives generally, which in many ways is all about the crossing of boundaries,
yeah,
knowing your own journey as a human person and what you're going through, it's like an incredibly brave act. And to see what your experience was in Tahoe, and even your experience in defending the words that you used for how you felt and your refusal to apologize for words, I found it really impactful, especially because there's an element of tone policing where people focus on, I felt a certain way when a word was used, and not, why did she feel a certain way to begin with? Mm-hmm. And coupled with that, if you are telling people that the word violated is connected maybe with body dysmorphia, maybe with something else, or maybe just feeling like I am naked in this room filming a reality TV show, now's not a great time for somebody to walk in. And people respond and they're like, well, but I feel like you used it in a sexual context, and you say repeatedly, but I didn't mean that. I'm telling you literally that I did not mean it. But I feel that you did, and I'm upset that you did. And now I'm trying to comfort someone who's upset because they felt that you did, even when that you tell them that you didn't. You're working and operating and participating willingly in an environment that's going to be shown in some context later on TV screens. People are going to want to discuss it. You know your own human experience that you're bringing with you to the table, and you're also allowing for the idea that people are going to act at you in a way that you don't agree with or that hurts your feelings. It is actually, to me, a really interesting concept when you think of mental health, because it's like you are allowing people to maybe encroach and cross over your boundaries. And I can't imagine how painful that is in real time. But I would think like the marathon of life style, like in 6 miles, that might actually, oddly enough, help you in some way. Because now you're at like the worst possible thing that you may have felt has helped you move a little bit quicker to like the next point in the race.
Right.
Which is a weird way of thinking about it.
No, and not at all.
It's an outsider perspective. I get the benefit of not having had to experience
it. It's
this.
This comes from someone saying your perspective. It's because you process things quite deeply.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit.
You really do. And it's incredibly impressive. And it's where, like, I would love to be like, that's my end game, is to keep processing it. In you dissect things so incredibly well. I'm just saying that to you because it's just so apparent. But yes, for me, like, I think, you know, because you can only, there's only so much you could see, right? Like, you film for every, you know, 80 hours, just 8 minutes, you mm-hmm. know, it's kind of incredible when you really look at it like that. I know my experience. I've worked I've talked about it a lot, mm-hmm. you know, all my body dysmorphia stuff. So I know I use my words properly for myself. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when people have their own interpretations of things, my perspective is just like, okay, fine. Like, that's how you feel. But the nature of this whole experience, you can't just let it go. Mm-hmm. I don't really, that's not normal for me. So normally, like, why let's just agree to disagree. This group doesn't like to agree to disagree. They want everyone to agree at some point. And so that was challenging for me, because the only alternative would be like, okay, take it back. And then, which I, for me, I just have to be super authentic mm-hmm. and be honest. Mm-hmm. And if I did that, I would be like a liar. And then I'd be lying to myself. I'm saying, like, if I were to take the word back.
Yeah.
That would be inauthentic.
Well, why should you take the word back?
To resolve things. Like, because here's the thing. This is, again, what I'm learning is, like, some, like I said, like, I know I'm, like, in tangents in my head right now. People want to have things resolved. I understand that. I think that's good natured.
Yeah.
People want people to be happy.
Sure.
And hug it out.
Yeah.
And for me, my lesson of this, like, getting to know people is, what do they need? Because I don't have an ego like that. My ego is not like, I'm going to win this war. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, you know, in the moment, it was hard for me to understand why no one could understand mm-hmm. my perspective. But I think what I'm learning, what I take away from it is really trying to understand. In the future, what I would do is I would still express how I feel, still say this is my experience. And if you don't understand it, you know, like, let's try to find a way for you to. Mm-hmm. That would be how I would approach it next time. It's not being apologetic. It's not taking the word back. But I have to remember that people can't possibly understand what we go through.
Yeah.
If they've never gone through it.
Which sucks.
It's hard. But they don't understand. If they really don't understand it, but they also, everyone has their own patterns from their childhood, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. I also, that's a lesson for me, is to remember that someone else has their own trauma and that something I'm saying or doing could trigger them too.
I mean, these are great lessons to learn, but also it might be in opposition to, you know, being on fucking Housewives. I mean, I don't know that they want someone that's like verbose talking about the gray for 6 hours. I think they want someone who's like, I'm not going to apologize. I mean,
well, I wouldn't apologize no matter what.
I mean, and that there is, we go. And there we go.
Yes. So. I would not apologize. And I genuinely feel bad if anyone is affected negatively by something I say, because that's never the intention, mm-hmm. you know? But I will also not apologize for how I feel personally.
Well, I think that there are ways, you know, there's like the joke that I'm sorry if you feel that way is like the most passive aggressive thing you could ever say. But in the context of that Bolognese dinner, and shout out to Harry Hamlin for
he's amazing.
A bang up job. Great. Everything looked great. Tablescape.
It's beautiful.
A++. Also just his bemused, possibly side almost disgusted expression as all these I just love him to bits, but in that context, the I'm sorry you feel that way, I thought fit, because it was like, I'm was sorry genuine. You were upset, which seemed like it triggered her further.
I was totally genuine about that, and I think that people say that flippantly, so I do understand that. But I don't want anyone to feel bad. Like, that is not.
What do you think triggered Sutton in that moment?
Again, I've been really dissecting this. Someone wrote something this week that I read, that because they flashbacked on her mom.
Yeah.
And that maybe I am similar to her mom. So that I'm stoic, you know, huh. And it's funny because this is – okay, because I always want to understand people. I want them to understand me genuinely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, what is it in me,
yeah,
right, that might trigger her? Mm. And we've gotten to a much better place. So, like, it's been nice to, like things settle. Mm-hmm. And that kind of plays out over the next, you know, few months. But – as I now, I like, again, I said, I need a lot of space. I need a lot of time to process. And now I'm like at a good place where I can really sort of dissect it and look at myself on outside as an outsider. And I grew up with someone who was very similar that put a lot of blame on me.
Similar to who?
To Sutton.
Sutton. To Sutton herself or her mom? To Sutton?
No, I grew up with someone in my life that was similar that had, you know, was very emotional.
Okay, got it.
And sort of took it out on me.
Okay.
Focused it on me.
Got it.
When another, you know, because lack of, just hyper emotional.
Got it.
You know, and which made me put up walls.
Yeah.
Because I could not, like, there were so many, every day was like every day on me, on mm-hmm. me, on me. Mm-hmm. And then if I would have any reaction, they would cry. So I think that that's for me was my, you know, so, and I think based on the little I saw of her mom just in that thing, that maybe that's a negative trigger for her because she was upset that her mom wouldn't give her more. And but I didn't know that until I saw this episode.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, maybe that is what she needed more from me. Right. But I'm unwilling to give it because of my childhood experience. That's what I'm saying. So everything comes down to every single person, even my brother, grew up in the same house. Our experiences, we talk about this all the time.
Totally different.
Totally different. And your experience is obviously extremely different than mine. Mm-hmm. So I think not just Sutton, but everyone on the cast, I think that's how they put people together, right? Complete, like the dynamics change with mm-hmm. one person, one droplet, you know, the ocean just waves, right? And I think that everyone has a history. And when you meld people that and throw them into this kind of environment, mm-hmm. that's what creates not just drama, but conversation.
Yeah.
Intense conversation.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I thought, just myself as a viewer, was thinking when I watched the lead up to that moment, and shout out to Pants, by the way, justice for Pants. I am not a pants person. I don't wear pants. I have two pairs of jeans that I, that I, out of pity, honestly, for the, I wanted to support the jean industry, but you're in jeans. I'm in a dress, you know, potato, potato, but, let's call the whole thing off.
No, the pants were
adorable.
Yeah. But I'm not a fashion girl. So like, I think that's what I was like laughing. Cause I'm like, I don't care. Like fashion is not my thing.
Yeah.
And when that commercial came out, Kathy called me like, oh my God, it's so funny. Because she knows. She's like, mm-hmm. it's about, because I wasn't there. But it was funny, but my stylist called me. She's like, what the fuck? Those pants are amazing. I'm like, relax, dude. Who cares? There's pants, you know? She was like so mad. I was like, oh my God. I don't care. Like that stuff just... like that, I don't care about that. So I don't care about clothes or anything like that.
I mean, you do have a bemused look on your face when Sutton's your ugly leather pants and then, you know, high turn, very dynasty, very Dallas, very like sassafras moment. You do.
I don't think I've never actually fought with anyone. So I was like, oh, okay, this is like, I just remember thinking it was so silly. Like, oh, this is like silly women fighting. Like, so I just like, I was literally outside of it in a way. Like I was watching it happen. I was like, oh, she's yelling at someone about her pants. I was like, what? It was just so wacky to me. I just didn't understand it. So that's, but I get, cause when I'm uncomfortable, I like, you know, like I have one girlfriend, Angela, she always laughs. Like if someone gets hurt, she laughs. And it's not because she's cruel.
It's just a reaction. It's a physical guttural. It's like a defense mechanism. It's a defense.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, like what am I supposed to say? Like, am I supposed to yell back? I don't like your shoes. I don't insult people in their clothes. Like I don't, that's not, I don't care about clothes, so it's not like something I would do. I just didn't know what to do. So I just stood there like, okay, she doesn't like my pants.
I mean, I would, you know, that combined with Hunky Dory, which I showed you my phone. It's the screensaver on my phone.
I wasn't there either. I didn't hear any of it because I was up at the top. Yeah, I wasn't.
I mean, it is one of the most interesting because it's much like Hunky Dory, like in real, like Kathy just wants to know who has that nickname because she thinks in yes. nicknames. So she's genuinely asking who is Hunky Dory so she can follow along with this conversation. Yes. And the look in your eyes, the way that you looked at Sutton when she was like, head into the door, it was fascinating. It did not feel in any way dark or anything else. It landed as like a bemused expression of someone who is filming the show, participating in a cast member, but also you did look a little bit like a Bravo viewer who got like admission to the zoo and is watching some, like what is even happening, right?
That's how I felt.
It's the like bubble inside the bubble inside yeah. the bubble, which is actually I think the direction in which Housewives is headed, because we've all seen too much. We know these women, we know the characters, we know
yeah. You bring up a great point, because I watched the show, so I always watched the show before. So when I was in that moment, in most moments I'm there, and especially in the beginning, like the first few months of filming, few weeks, that was only a month into it, mm-hmm. I always felt like a viewer, like I was on set watching the cast. So even though I was in it, I was like, what's, you know, and I remember production would be like, you're part of it. Like, go into, like, walk oh, yeah. on. I was like, I just remember, like, I felt like a viewer.
Yeah.
So all those moments happening, I'd be saying like, you know, the cameras, that's the thing. It's not like, you don't. People say, oh, you forget the cameras. Like, I didn't. So maybe some people do. Maybe if you're an actor, you do. I didn't, because I don't walk around with cameras around me.
Right.
So I remember feeling like a viewer. That's exactly my experience. I was like, oh, like they're all doing this thing right now. And then I was like, oh, that's why I just kind of sat there in the corner. Like, what's happening? Like, I'm not a part of this. This is their show.
I mean, but also how fabulous. I would love, I think that is an amazing experience, because it's like a Beverly Hills specifically, and this is meant in the best kind of way, is like a combination of The Muppets Take Manhattan and she, in this sense that it's like Lisa Rinna is a character. Yeah. The Richard saga has been a Greek tragedy, and now we're into a little bit of a rom-com. Right. Like, we have seen all of the different ways. We've seen Erica Jane is Erica. She is a 10-part miniseries HBO prestige totally. Television drama that's probably being scripted as we speak. We actually feel like we are watching the script being written and read at the same time at this point. There are our archetypes in Beverly Hills because of the connection to Hollywood, and also because we have watched these women yeah. for so long. So to interact with Kyle Richards, sidebar, I'm a total Kyle apologist and very happy for her relationship with Kyle and Kat.
It's like, pretty fabulous.
Love a little screwball comedy with the Richards sisters. But to watch the show as a viewer and then participate in the vehicle as a cast member, I kind of love the idea that you are aware of the mechanism. I think that
hyper aware.
That adds to the kind of almost joy of it sometimes.
I feel like it's not good though.
No, I fucking love it, but I'm not you. I love that idea. As soon as you said that, I was like, that is probably, well, no, I would honestly forget about them.
Oh, see, I like,
I'm a little bit crazy.
But I'll tell you, now that when we stop filming, getting to them all individually, but from yeah. end of filming to now, mm-hmm. has humanized everyone for me.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't meet anyone before. Like, they don't, like, that's not, but you just jump in and then yeah. you're supposed to be like, everyone's your best friend now. You're like, I don't know you. And and getting to know people in a group setting of eight constantly is because there's so much other stuff going on from mm-hmm. their history mm-hmm. from the seasons past. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm just sitting there as like a viewer.
Yeah.
So I remember all those moments. I was like, I literally was a deer in headlights all the time. So it was like, I was in my go-to discomfort face is like laughing or smiling, like just trying to be like, okay, I'm just here sitting mm-hmm. here quietly because I don't know what to do, because mm-hmm. I'm not the type to interject myself when I don't need to be there, you know, even if it was happening to me. I was mm-hmm. like, I'm just, that's just not my personality. I don't need to, like, I remember they were like, you can give your opinion. I'm like, well, I don't need to give my opinion right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not necessary. Mm-hmm. But the nature of the show is about, and to get to know people, they want to know your opinion, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I totally, like, that moment was like, what's going on?
I mean, it's an iconic moment. I have to tell you that episode is one. Like in the house. There is a literal Housewives Museum at BravoCon, and it is the leather pants. I swear, do you still have them?
Of course.
Have you worn them since?
Yes, I wear leather pants all the time now. It's like my thing.
Do you do a high waist? Because it had like a belt situation, right? And pleating.
Yes, they're ALC. They're fabulous.
Did you see them. Rachel Zoe had some thoughts on it on Watch What Happens recently?
I did.
And what do we think about that?
I think she would like them in real life.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that she would think that they were bananas.
They chose like a shot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That it was sort of like it should have been pulled down and whatever. I'm like, yeah, they don't look great in that moment, but they look good in like in movement. But by the way, I actually don't really like, I don't even know where I'm wearing tonight to watch what happens. Like, I don't care. I'll just bring a bunch and then I let like whoever's in the room decide. I don't like all my confessionals. I plan that day. Like, I was like, let's try this, and I just do it. Like, it's not, that is not my thing, so I don't really care.
I just love the idea of you going out to dinner in leather pants. I just think that would be so meta for a Bravo viewer to be like, oh my god, is that Crystal from Beverly Hills? Is she in leather pants right
now? It's constant. My friends are like, why are you not wearing your leather pants today? I'm like, I'm so sorry, like, I didn't mean
to offend you. At BravoCon, would you wear leather pants to BravoCon?
Yeah.
I'm honestly looking at you dead in the eye. I'm gonna need to have a conversation. I really feel like
you want the exact ones, right?
Doesn't matter to me. I'm open, but I feel like it's a moral imperative. It's like hashtag nature is healing. It's to see you show up at BravoCon with leather pants, and then someone asks Sutton what she thinks, and she's gonna fucking love them.
That's funny. I wear leather pants way more often now. I just feel like it's a thing. Oh, I love that journey
for you. I love that.
And Rob's always like, oh, the pants. I'm like, yeah, baby, the pants are, like, I just wear them all the time now.
I mean, I love it. Maybe I'm turning into pants. I don't know.
No, they're pretty amazing.
I mean, listen, speaking of amazing, I do need to give a little shout out to the sponsor for
this episode. Yes, yes. I know. We haven't even, like, I feel like there's so much.
Oh, there's so much, and there are some questions that I need to ask you. But listen, speaking of all things amazing that I love, this episode is brought to you by the amazing new podcast, Jeff Lewis Has Issues. You may know Jeff Lewis from the hit Bravo series Flipping Out or his Sirius XM radio show, Jeff Lewis Live. And now Jeff is bringing you a brand new podcast we think you'll love called Jeff Lewis Has Issues. Whether it's drama with family and friends to parenting or relationships, there's no denying Jeff Lewis has issues. Jeff is joined each week by friends, experts, and celebs from Tamra Judge and Jackie Schimmel to Judge Lauren Lake, Patty Stanger, and others as they take a no-holds-barred deep dive into every detail of Jeff's life. Come for the laughs and leave feeling so much better about your own life. I'm very into that. Check out Jeff Lewis Has Issues. You can subscribe now on Stitcher, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And thank you so much, Jeff Lewis Has Issues, for sponsoring this wonderful app with my favorite and America's sweetheart, Crystal, from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Guys, if you are still listening to this amazing Fashion Police special episode of Andy's Girls, listen, I do have a question for you, because you talked about your experience as a viewer, now a participant in all things Housewives, which is a wild journey, but one that I think we're getting into when we get into the generation of new Housewives and people joining franchises in motion as opposed to ones that are currently on air. I think of Beverly Hills as a tentpole franchise, and I mean that in the best possible way of, like, it is a prestige Housewives show. So how have your opinions of the Housewives changed as you've gotten to know them from being, you know, a housewife yourself?
Yeah. Wait, hold on.
Do it.
Rob's here. Can he come in?
Of course he can.
Rob.
Oh my God, Hakuna Matata, Rob. Hakuna Matata.
This is Sarah.
Hi, how are we?
This is Rob.
I'm so good.
Come sit,
come
honey.
Come have a seat. Come just watch us talk about ugly leather pants. Okay.
What do you think about the pants, honey?
I did not think they were that ugly.
That ugly is the, yeah. I'm going to remember the that. That would be the conversation I'd have with my husband later on and be like, let's walk that word back a little bit.
That's pretty good for Rob, actually.
I think that's great.
Yeah. No, Rob is like, you know, because of his job, he looks at costumes and whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I come like, what do you think? Like, oh, if I'm going to dinner, he's like, I'm like, okay, not asking you. You're supposed to just say you look great. But he will like, I don't know about this. So Rob will be very honest about.
Sometimes it's for, you know, for the effect that it has. If you want to go for this or you want to go for that. And I did say to her, I said, if you want to piss off Sutton, wear those leather pants.
Did you say that?
No.
Oh my God, I believed you. Did you see how gullible I am? Truly. Can I ask you a question, Rob? If you were to, this is going to make no sense, but welcome to the pod. If you were to, come closer to a mic. We're going to have a little conversation with you.
Sit with Rob.
If you were to compare your experience or watching the show or the show itself to any Disney movie, the world of Beverly, this is a deeply unfair question. I just thought about it and it's bringing me joy to make you feel slightly uncomfortable with having to, because it's very complicated. Okay. So welcome to my psyche. What Disney movie do you think The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills would be? So hard, right?
No, it's too hard. That's too hard. I don't know.
Really?
No, yeah, it's too hard.
Interesting.
An ensemble?
Yeah. I was going to say a disaster movie, but I don't, but I can't think of a Disney disaster movie.
You know what I just thought of?
Like The Perfect Storm.
Oh, a great movie. Yeah. Clooney. Amal could be a potential housewife of,
yeah,
if
absolutely.
She's, you know, tired of trying war criminals in being married to George Clooney.
Yeah.
You know what I just thought of? You're going to, I don't know that you're going to like this, but you know what Disney movie actually kind of thought of as I said that out loud? What? Little bit of The Little Mermaid.
How do you see that?
Know, I have no idea.
Rob created Ursula.
Shut up! No, you did not.
Was it based on
Lisa Vanderpump? Yeah, just kidding.
I brag for Rob.
I was a character designer on the movie and I did a drawing of Ursula kind of inspired by Divine, you know, Divine from John Waters movies.
Of course I know Divine.
But it was very different than what the writers, who are also the directors, wrote in the script. They described her as Joan Collins-esque. So all the other designs were of a very slender, very, you know, sort of big forehead and black hair. And I drew this sort of Divine, rather extra voluptuous kind of woman, you know, with pink lips and blue eyeshadow, which looked very much like a thing from a Divine. And Howard Ashman, who produced and wrote the lyrics, came into a meeting apparently and saw that one drawing and said, that's Ursula.
I literally am outside of my body right now. She's like Justice for Ursula, number one.
Right?
A fantastic character. Yes. And you created the essence of, you made Ursula, Ursula.
And then I came on the project and did the very first animation of the character with the octopus tentacles and all of that.
You can have your own podcast.
If you guys could see the look of disbelief, that is such an incredibly important part of like pop culture movie history. Am I using words properly? How do words work in a sentence? I just think that's amazing. That's phenomenal. And I didn't know, do people know about the
connection with Divine?
Yeah.
it comes up every now and then.
Serious animation fans.
I really didn't know.
So we did a live action reference, which means that you photograph a human actor performing different stuff. So I brought in a friend who was also a CalArts he wasn't in the animation department. He was in the acting school, but he was a roommate and he came in and it was a he, and he was rather large. He dressed up in a muumuu did the whole kind of Divine kind of cross-dressing thing. And Howard Ashman was actually there. And there is videotape that exists, but I haven't gotten my hands on it yet. But yeah, so there's a whole kind of, yes, but it's, I don't know, it's not talked about. I don't know.
I'm without words.
Oprah has now.
I'm like literally without words. I actually. This is like the. I don't know why I feel emo about this part now. We've had some crying. Things are happening. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Sure.
On behalf of every person who has ever seen The Little Mermaid. Actually, you know what? Is The Little Mermaid is in my top It would be the Little, obviously the Lion King. I mean, obviously. Little Mermaid, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, yeah, which is my father's favorite movie. But, you know, he's not.
I worked on that too.
What did you do for that movie?
Well, I worked in the early part of development and wrote a treatment of the story. Wrote kind of an early draft of a.
Wow.
I was young. I was a kid. I was in my 20s, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'm in my spiritual mid-20s, so okay, we can meet there. We're meeting in the middle.
I still am.
But that's how we're both in our spiritual mid-20s.
Animators is they never grow old.
So what has your experience been watching your wife take on a different kind of entertainment vehicle?
Well, it's been kind of fun. I mean, I'm enjoying it. You know,
yeah,
it's a big change. It's kind of, it's crazy. It's a sort of crazy thing.
Well, I'm like lying in bed crying. Like, what are they?
Those moments where it's really affected her and it's been very difficult, which wasn't unexpected. So I remember before she decided to do the show, talking to her about it and saying, okay, here's the things you need to prepare for.
Yeah.
You know, be always be on your guard, be realistic. You know, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to come at you that, you know, are unavoidable.
Yeah.
You just have to, it goes with the territory. Once you become a public person, you know, it's just a lot of stuff that, you know, you don't think about, I guess, or you can't know until you get there, mm-hmm, which is, I think, Crystal's experience. It's sort of, you can talk about it, but mm-hmm, until you're actually confronting it and living it, it's sort of abstract. So now she's been living it, but she's, I think, doing incredibly well. You know, she's very resilient. She's bounced back a few times.
I mean, listen, Beverly Hills, it gets compared to the Dynasty, the Dallas, the like over dramatic at times. The fact that there's glam for a brunch, a picnic, a barbecue lends the idea that this is escapist to the hilt. But you work in the world of Ursula. So you're like used to these kinds of people. I mean that in the most positive kind of, if you are living inside the head of Ursula.
Yeah.
Lisa's not going to seem that different. You know what I'm saying? I mean that in the best, most entertaining way, that it's like the idea of escapism, of characters, of sometimes literal and figurative, at times cartoons.
Fair enough. But I think for me, because of what I do, I'm always interested in why people do what they do.
Yes.
Not what they do particularly. Like, people do stuff. They do crazy stuff. And I don't, for me, I don't judge what they do, because
yeah,
I'm more interested in
why
they do it. And for me, when I feel like I understand why they do it, I sort of go, oh, I get it. Like, I understand why they're that.
You see why I married him?
Yeah, I'm super into
like
you.
Like, he's, yeah, gets it.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's why when I said, it's like when we watch it later,
yeah,
after he's like, okay, let's talk about what you did. I was like, you get the fuck out of here. And then I'm like, okay, 8 months later, I'm like, so remember when you said... So I've processed and I've watched it back. He's like, okay, let's talk about it. So it's very helpful. Like,
that's why it's a great partnership, because we have emotional intelligence where you're probably in real time kind of unpacking the why. And we have emotional expression, which is still seeped in the well of emotional intelligence, but where you're able to like express how you're thinking. And maybe you obviously think about the why, but you just process it in a different way.
Yeah, that's what we were saying. It takes me a long time
to
process, and I need time. But anyways, back to Anna.
No.
I mean, I think we're wrapping up the animation element. Just want to say thank you so much on behalf of Ursula, apologists everywhere. Really, I mean, an iconic role in history.
So welcome.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Okay,
I'm gonna talk to your wife just a little bit more before she gets ready for Watch What Happens.
So you were asking me about the difference.
Yeah, between watching the women as a Bravo viewer and now being a Bravo Leb.
Okay, so that is even odd.
Yeah.
Because I still have, like, it's over, so I just am back to like my normal life.
Sure.
But yeah, that part's weird. You know, it just humanizes people. And mm-hmm, I think that's sort of what happens when anyone meets a celebrity. Like I said, I viewed them as celebrities before.
Right. As well they are.
Yeah.
There are actual celebrities who go and watch What Happens Live who specifically request, you know, housewife X or Y. There are people who in interviews, a friend of mine is Annalie Ashford, who's a Tony winner and is now in the Ryan Murphy, the new Monica vehicle. And she talks about that. She talked about on a recent ep of AG, like, she'll go on a red carpet and she'll be by genuine huge celebrities, but she sees Melissa Gorga and she's like, oh my God, Melissa and Joe. Like, it's, there are ways that actual celebrities working, you know, yes, actors in Hollywood look at housewives different than each other even.
Totally. I mean, because I have friends who are actors and they are like
super stans.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe
they call me like, I need to know before it comes out tonight. And I'm like, you shut up. You just watch it. Fucking idiot. So, but they all know who I'm talking about right
Love
now.
Love that.
But, and like big actors, I'm like, shut up. But they're obsessed. Like, yeah, they're obsessed with it. So here's what I love about it is that I get to know them as whole people.
Yeah.
Right? Like what you see is very narrow version, mm-hmm, although real.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all very dynamic people. Mm-hmm. They're all moms, wives, ex-wives, daughters, you know, and full of emotion. No one's perfect, but every single one of them, all good people, all, like, I get to know them in a different way and they get to know who I am rather than this weird sliver of, mm-hmm, a character that I am. And so that's always great, you know. And now that I get to know that more, I think I'll, for sure, it's, I don't feel like I'm on a movie set anymore that I felt season one.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think has checked in on, or who has checked in on you most, knowing a freshman season is often the most burdensome because the switch,
yeah,
from, you know, viewer or whomever, human person, to now talent and specifically a part of the Housewives. Has any specific cast member checked in on you just to be like, this is going to, you know, buckle up?
Yeah. So I would say Garcelle from the beginning, we were texting already like in Tahoe.
Oh, wow.
Like just because she knew it was a lot was going on.
Yeah.
And just checking in with me in my, you know, texting me. Lisa has been very incredible That's guidance great. And that was during filming, but since I talked to everybody all the time. Dorit was great. Everyone was really helpful, and like Dorit was like, you know, you never came, like, they're always wary of the new girl, like, what is her thing,
and does she have a vendetta? Yes. Is she gonna come after someone?
Yes. And they're like, you're not
that.
Yeah. So they're like, everyone's cool. Like, everyone's happy because you're not that person. And I'm like, oh, what does that look like? Like, that would be weird for me if someone came in like guns blazing.
Yeah.
But that's what I was expecting. I was expecting guns blazing, you know, but I was like, oh, I'm just going to kill them with kindness. And, you know, it'll all change. You know, it's like, you just don't know. You don't know what the dynamics are going to be like.
Yeah.
But I, you know, it's, they're all these women, every single one of them is, you know, they're all really good people and have real lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, what's interesting is a lot of audience just thinks this group is like your friend group.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone has like real, there's friendships in this group for sure. And there's also other friendships too.
Right.
You know, and so when people like go out together and you're not included, it's like, I'm allowed to have dinner with whoever I want to, whether if it's two people together, all eight of us, one of us. It doesn't downgrade my relationships with other people.
Totally. I would think it would strengthen them.
Sure. But it's just everyone, you know.
I have to ask you about the Erica element, because, yeah, you happen to be having your first season on a season of one of the prestige franchises, on a season that will go down is one of the best seasons, certainly
of modern history, and the Real Housewives of it all.
But you're also dealing with circumstances that haven't necessarily been seen before. We've, you know, crime be criming. So we've seen it a little bit on Jersey. We're definitely going through it in an entirely different way on Salt Lake City. And in Beverly Hills, you guys have the pleasure of finding out this stuff. And this stuff is like in quotes, because who even knows what that
pleasure.
You know, I mean, what a privilege it is to find this stuff out while you're filming with each other, trying to get to know someone who you have seen as a viewer for, yes, several seasons, who you are now trying to understand as the human person behind the,
yeah,
you know, it's not ice, it's diamonds. And then you're finding out all of this other stuff, or perhaps have questions. How did you find your role, you know, like, what did you feel like your role was in all of that?
So two parts to that. So I felt very much, I was already uncomfortable being on camera the whole time, let alone her having to share all this information with someone she just met.
Yeah.
So I really took a step back because I felt almost guilty. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't want to, a lot of people don't talk about this anyway. A lot of people go through their own stuff. You don't, you're not sharing it with brand new people in front of camera. So I was just there, like, we really connected, as you see from last episode, like, when she talks about him with dementia, possible dementia, and that's what my dad went. So I just has been there to support her, you know, showing her and expressing to her what I went through as a daughter of it. Other than that, it was really interesting, again, because this was still fairly early of the season, like mid-season now. I still, at this moment, still felt a little bit, I was getting closer with them, but still felt like I was watching the show. So I was like watching the cast go through this as I'm sitting there listening in. Like, I just got to hear it before you guys got to watch it today. That's how I felt, I remember. The other part of it was, you know, I remember Lisa was like, and Kyle, they were like, you're really getting to know a side that we don't really get to see, this very raw, vulnerable side. And because I was like, oh, she seems so warm.
Yeah.
Because even though I watched a show, and that's why I think Andy asked me last time I watched, like, who was the most that you did, like, different?
Yeah.
Because I watched a show and then I'm getting this side. But when you get to see them day in, day out, I'm watching an extremely vulnerable side, right? Mm-hmm. So I am getting to know her as the first time ever getting to know someone who is not the ice girl that has this character from
the ice is fully melted at this point.
So that's why I connected with her because of that, of her story about the sickness. And so it was interesting. So they were saying to me, you are getting to know her in a very different way. So me specifically, you know, for my first season. So that was very interesting. And so that's how we developed our friendship.
What happened when the cameras went down that night? When she's like, yeah, he was unconscious for 12 hours. I found him out of his car. He drove down a cliff. Also, he was having an affair. There's a lot of stuff happening. This is a new person in your life who you know. You certainly know of them.
Yeah.
But you also are aware that this is a very different kind of scenario. And it's very apparent, according to the other people at the table, that this is all very new information. Yeah. Was there a little bit of a, like, what the fuck just happened?
For me, I was just listening, because I wasn't there last year. So a couple years ago when she told them the story. And because I know that only so much is shown versus the whole lengthy conversation, I was just sitting there listening, because I'm like, there must have been a long conversation 3 years ago too. Mm. And so they're all trying to make sense of it, where I'm listening for the first time. So I don't have any discrepancies.
Yeah.
I'm just listening. Okay, that's the story. Like, and I remember Andy's like, do you believe her about her divorce? I was like, why not? Like, if you just told me you're getting divorced, I'm like, okay, like, I met you 3 days ago.
Yeah.
Why would I not? And at this time, it was still that same feeling of, like, they're like, what happened? And I just thought, well, she's obviously trying to protect a story of, you know, he's a prominent lawyer. All this, it all made sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm someone that needs everything to make sense. Mm-hmm. So when I was sitting there, the story is wild. It's like, it sounds like it's from a movie. However, I totally believed that when she was telling the story, why she didn't tell the whole story 3 years ago, because you're protecting your marriage and your family. So there's nothing to be ashamed about that.
Yeah.
You know, everyone has their stuff behind closed doors, and people should be allowed to have that. And when you want to share it, you share it. And so this was the time for her to share the whole thing. But again, I didn't hear the stuff before. So I had nothing. I just heard it for the first time. It was like a new story for me.
And I mean, I feel like that response is a little bit of a window into the tension of what seems to have to exist specifically for you and the rest of the cast when it comes to just like navigating everything that's happening right now, because in real time, we all have the benefit, those of us who are watching the episodes now, of knowing where this story goes without actually knowing where it's going to end. At least when it comes to like the conversation in the news, the updates that we're hearing legally, and also the release of the Hulu documentary, which was really centered around or seen through the lens of the actual victims of Tom's alleged crimes. And there's the question of Erica, which remains a question mark. We're also now seeing her responses on social, which are pretty aggressive. And we're watching those responses as we watch her open up, maybe for the very first time on Housewives, and share real vulnerabilities and secrets even of things that we didn't know, that no one would have ever known.
Yeah.
And we know that the only reason we're hearing them is because of the divorce and because of maybe everything that's going on legally. And there's a tension there because there seems to be anger in the Bravo world about any kind of seeming empathy for Erica, of like, we can't feel bad for her because there are victims and burn literal people whose families have died, whose money and hope was stolen from them by her husband. And yet it is also true that one can feel empathy for Erica and her experience, acknowledge that we'll never actually really know the question that most people are asking of, do you think Erica knew? We can empathize with her, with what she's going through, with our new understanding of her relationship with her husband, which led to their impending divorce. We can empathize with the pressure that she's under and the enormous financial strain of that, the legal questions that remain, and also ask, like, where is the button that goes off of expressing any empathy for the other lives that were harmed?
Okay, so I totally understand what you're saying. I really do.
Yeah.
And I would probably feel that same way had I not been on the show.
Yeah.
Because you can watch everything through sort of this edited lens, right?
Totally.
Social media is edited too. All of it. It's like designed to create a story, right? All I know for me is that I saw a whole person.
Yeah.
I saw someone who constantly message, and still today messages me to check in how I'm doing with the show.
Love that.
Like, I'm like, why are you text? I literally like, you're going, don't worry about me, I'm good. This is a hard show. It's like, are you okay? Like, that's the person that I get to experience. That being said, I cannot whatever guidance she's getting, there has to be a reason to not address what's going on with the victims, because those are the real victims in this all. But by the way, she might be a victim too.
I completely
agree. We don't know.
And it's also the tension of the idea that people are like, but the story should be about the victims. And that's not that that's wrong. I agree with it. But Erica is on a reality show about her life. The lens that we are seeing this, yes, the focus of the story when it comes to the greater idea of who was most harmed by this, I think everyone, and maybe Erica at some point privately or whatever, can agree that the people who were most harmed, whose lives were most put in jeopardy, were the burn victims. Yeah. There's a reason that people
I can't imagine that that's not in her heart. That's hard for me to imagine that that's not, that she doesn't think about that all the time. I think right now she, and this is all speculation, because I try to put myself in her situation, right? Where mine was leather pants, and I felt my world was spiraling of the intensity of arguing about a word. I can't, this is real stuff. My stuff is frivolous, you know what I mean? Looking back.
Yeah.
It, but in the time, how intense it was for me. What she's going through is unimaginable across, and no one can put themselves in her shoes. You can try. So I try. So I think, what is she going through? I think she is likely in survival mode. Her whole life has crumbled. It's not, it has crumbled, right? And whether she is a victim, we don't know.
We don't know.
But I think, that's the only thing I can think of as to why that hasn't been addressed yet. she has a whole team. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what I would do. I don't know, but I can't imagine from the little that I know, I can't say, you know, we're, mm-hmm. you know, but from what she has shown me and her concern for me, mm-hmm. there's no way she's not thinking about it. Yeah. And I do hope that it does get addressed at some point.
I think there's,
maybe she can't right now. I don't know.
I think that there's a way for it to maybe happen, but it probably can't happen while she's in triage. I think it's like a next season kind of thing. And I think that we have an expectation of wanting wrongs to be made right. And that's just not how people process things. Yeah. And what she's probably finding out now, regardless of whether she suspected it, is her life wasn't real. The foundation of her relationship with her husband and the lifestyle he provided and the concessions that she made as a person, as a partner, as a caregiver, made in support of helping him to provide for her and their family, was based in some ways on fraud. I mean, in some ways, I mean, I don't know how much of it. We're still figuring this out now. That is a lot to take on. And then you have hundreds of thousands of people who are telling you that you were involved in something without an understanding that at the end of the day, no one will ever know. Correct. So the end of the sentence is the hope that a lot of people have, myself included, regardless of how realistic that is, psychologically, professionally, legally, or otherwise, is that she is able to acknowledge the harm that has been done to people and the hope that that happens at a certain point. And it's like people can feel anger and they have the right to feel anger and they have frustration, certainly about how she's, you know, discussed this online, which has been in a sardonic way, regardless of whether it's like based in defensiveness of like self-protection. And it just might be that that acknowledgement happens, but the show is centered around Erica and her experience. So it may well happen. It just might not happen yet, you know?
Again, what she was experiencing was real time.
Yeah.
10 months ago.
Totally.
That's what happened with me, right? Mm. And I think what I'd like to give grace to her in that she's going through trauma. And just because someone else's trauma is bigger, which is no doubt the victim's is bigger, regardless whether she knew or not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Her trauma is real for her. So like what I was going through with Sutton, right? I compare that on a smaller scale. I could only feel my trauma. I couldn't feel her trauma. Mm-hmm. But 10 months later, I give grace to her trauma. She had trauma when arguing with me and vice versa. We're both allowed to have that.
Yeah.
Regardless of who's right, who's wrong. And even if one person's right, mm-hmm. if it's one person in this thing with us is 100% right, the other person's wrong, both are still allowed to experience their feelings. So I think that if people want her to act, I guess I'm just thinking like, if people want me to act today how I was 10 months ago, that's also unrealistic.
Yeah.
You know, like people are like, "They're why are you doing this?" It's like, this was 10 months ago mm-hmm. and I can't, like, it's, just keep watching is what you're supposed to say, right? So I think that for her, because the story is just starting still, we're not at the end, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just time. You know, that's what I imagine is happening. I don't know. I mean, I don't ask questions. Like, I don't, it's not my business. If she wants to share with me, she will. But I mean, I just can't imagine she doesn't think about that. She's never shown me that kind of person that she is.
I mean, I also think that's why the reunion is so important, because it's the understanding of what we have seen now play out, confessionals you may not have seen, other stuff you may not have seen, and the public reaction to it. And then it's like the cast reaction to the public reaction and also to what they've seen cast members say online. How are you feeling about going into your first reunion?
I'm not nervous at all.
Great.
I think people are just like, why are you not nervous? I'm like, I don't know. I just know how I feel.
Love that.
My heart's open. My mind's open. I know I am. And I feel very convicted in my feelings. I also feel like I've evolved even just from a show. I've literally grown so much from doing the show. That is the bit of it. So much on so many levels. Like, it's, I came home actually right from New York, honey, last time. And I'm like, I've had this epiphany about, about my privilege and what it means. And he's like, okay, just
chill.
Fucking, yeah, relax. Right? It was like,
I was love I not, that though.
Like, wild. I was like, oh. I'm like, I have to really, probably, So, you know, that's my gift. And I have so much more to go. But whatever happens, the reunion, it's like, that's where I am at the moment. And it's going to be okay. Because I'm okay with how that was me a year ago. Because I know where I am today. And I, in a year, I'll be different too. But no, I'm not nervous about it. And I also, I have a good life. And I'm lucky. And I'm just, I try to find gratefulness in all of this experience. So just being able to be there, I'm going to be grateful for it. So,
are you coming back for a second season? Eyes.
I don't. We'll see. Let's wait. Let's get through season one.
Okay, I'm going to need you to come back on the People's Wheels couch and ask you that question again after you record the reunion. Wait, what were you going to say? I just, let's get through season one and
just, I'll see. You know. All right. Yeah. All right. I think it's,
we'll watch what happens.
Yes.
I love it. Listen, I've taken up more than enough of your time. Can I just say what a delight? This was maybe like the most enjoyable in every way. I really feel like we've covered a lot here. And I think the lens and the, you know, the care in which you've talked about your experiences is incredibly powerful. And I just really think vulnerability is absolutely everything. And you should be really proud of how you've handled yourself on the show, certainly on this one. And, you know, I selfishly am desperado for you to stay next season because in my like crafty little brain, I have an idea similar to Garcelle and, Kyle, I always felt like, oh, united together, like they would be magical. And I see that with you and so many of the cast members. And I'm excited for you to come into hopefully a second season, which I will force upon you. You think this is a choice that you're making and I've already signed on your behalf. But I think that it could be something really incredible to watch you knowing the things about yourself, the lessons that you've learned, the little bit of maybe some battle scars from your first season. But, you know, people talk about a second season curse. And I also think about it as a second season opportunity, which is like, okay, you're no longer new at this. There's a lot of power in that and not being the one who's just trying to figure it out. You have the benefit of having already experienced it. You now know truly what you've signed up for. You've also survived one of the craziest seasons of any franchise. This was not an idea in anyone's head, even when it comes to the Erica stuff alone, plus everything else, plus the ugly on their pants. I would love to see you back a second season. And I'd love to hear more about your life and your journey and everything thank else. You. And I can't thank you enough for coming on Andy's Girls for this 700-hour episode.
I adore you. I just love Andy's Girls.
I mean, I truly adore you. I think you are fantastic and incredibly powerful in every possible great way. Tell the AGs how to follow you on social and make a margarita on Instagram and all this other amazing stuff.
I'm at Crystal Kung.
She's
Bangkok.
Not sure. Okay, that's wonderful.
And I know everybody's like, get on TikTok and whatever. I'm like, I mean, a little behind. It. I will. I will. I have a TikTok. It. I think I have 7 followers.
I have 3. I just looked at mine. I've never like, posted and I never go on it. Yeah.
But I will. And then people are like, do YouTube, whatever. But for now, I'm a dinosaur with my Instagram and it's just, it's fine. It's, you know.
I mean, and you're making these like amazing recipes. So let's That's just, my, it's food very is my fabulous. Passion.
And I talked about that, like going from an eating disorder to hating food. Mm. I decided and I'm like, I'm going to just try something and love it.
I love that.
And it's been such a great thing for me. So that's where I'm at.
I mean, Crystal, my God, thank you so much. Everybody follow her if you're not already. And then when you're on Instagram, follow me at Dame Galley, patreon.com/AndyScrolls for exclusive bonus episodes. We recorded this episode before this week's Beverly Hills has aired, and I've heard New York is still ongoing. So I'm going to be recapping those episodes on Patreon. So if you want to hear my thoughts and feels on this week's app, of course, you need to be a Patreon AG. And our AG Summer Zoom Winter Charm Patreon Kiki is this Sunday, August 8th at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard. And sign up for Patreon for that exclusive Zoom link to OGs of the AG and the People's People's Couch levels. Crystal, thank you so much again. Wonderful. Rob, thank you so much for Ursula and everything else. guys, hope you are feeling safe and sane, getting vaccinated if you can, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.